After a decade away, the time is now. Join us in the campaign for the return of FBI criminal profiler Frank Black and Millennium. Welcome to the Back to Frank Black Millennium group sessions, my friends. This is who we are.
And welcome to another very special edition of the Millennium Group Sessions podcast. As always, I am Troy Foreman, the host of the show, and to my right, no, to my left, no, in front of me is our good friend and my secret lover, James McClain.
And I've moved a little bit closer to you now. Just a small bit, just like if we were in a queue and you were standing nearby and I wanted to get next to you, but I obviously didn't want you to notice it yet because I didn't want to give you that thrill that I was interested. I've just moved slightly towards you without you noticing, just a minor step.
I have three words for you, man.
Yeah.
Love is blue.
Love is blue. It is, isn't it? Oh, I can hear that in my head. I'm dancing to it now. Yes.
And that'll segue into this tremendous podcast we have today with the very talented actress, Sarah Jane Redmond, who we all know played Lucy Butler.
That's good music.
Great music. As we all know, this is Lucy Butler week. And we will end the week with this interview we did with Sarah Jane Redmond. And it was an absolute pleasure to speak with her. And she's a big Millennium fan, obviously. And she's a big supporter of this campaign.
She has been, yes, for a long time. I mean, she's not been able, we've spent months hopefully trying to arrange an interview with her, a written one, or as we've been very lucky to get now, an audio one. But things have always got in the way, but she's always been there in the background supporting us. So, yeah, yes. Just like a character, just there in the background. Just at the top of the stairs watching us right now.
So we were just absolutely thrilled to sit down and talk with her for about 45 minutes. And she was just a joy to speak with. One of the nicest people we've talked to on the podcast. And
we're hoping to have her back as well. She seems keen to come back and perhaps do something else for us. So listen out for that.
Yeah. So, there's no more need for us to speak anymore. I think we just go right into our little interview with Sarah.
I don't know. I'm feeling a monologue coming on, a diatribe. Where's my soapbox? No, come on. Put it on before I start speaking. I feel issues to do with Lucy Butler coming up, issues about how men view women throughout the ages, their fixation on trying to personify them, their sexuality as women's sexuality is evil, to avoid having to deal with their own shortcomings in their own sexual lust. I think we better move on. Come on quickly before I start. I can feel it welling inside me.
And with that being said,
oh, here it comes.
Here's our interview with Sarah Jane Redmond. Enjoy.
The following program was recorded on an earlier date for presentation at this time.
Love is blue. Not white, or red, or yellow. Love is not green. It's blue. That is the brilliance of this music.
When it comes to being straddled by a demon manifestation of unadulterated evil, word on the street is that 9 out of 10 Millennium fans would prefer the character played by our next guest. For the 10th of you who would not, I suggest that this interview is possibly not for you, and perhaps you should seek help on the whole demon straddling fetish thing. Despite only a handful of appearances on Millennium, Lucy Butler, the mysterious, alluring siren of darkness, has become more than her episodic parts. She is a true icon of the show, adored and possibly feared by fans. So brush your teeth, comb your hair, and put on your most absorbent underwear as tonight we give you the lady you love to fear to love. Wherever you may be across the globe, be you on a train, in your car, in your room, or like I, bathing in a vat of goat's milk, give your iPod an appreciative squeeze on behalf of our very special guest. Welcome the face of Lucy Butler, and may I add a whole host of other characters, Sarah Jane Redmond.
A vat of goat's milk, wow.
Don't know. Perhaps that was the soul.
Let's hope.
Sarah, I'm always curious as to how people start their path towards becoming an actress. Was yours something that you want to do early in life, or did it come to you later in life?
You know, I think it just sort of grew on me. It never really was a decision that I made. I I started off, I traveled quite a bit when I was a kid, and got into dance. I danced for about 8 years and just seemed to be the natural flow. I don't ever recall making a decision that that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed that that's what was, and that was the natural path of evolution for me.
Were there any actors or actresses when you were younger that, you know, you looked at them and said, oh, maybe that's what I want to do when I grow up or anything like that?
Well, no, but this is kind of funny. This is very strange. I remember watching John Denver, a John Denver concert when I was about 6 or 7 on television. I was glued to it, and I thought, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to be up there on stage.
From John Denver to Lucy Butler.
Yeah, there you go.
You spent a year in London, didn't you, for part of your studies?
I did. I actually didn't end up studying. I just traveled and had a really good time in London. But I did go there to go to theater school, and I ended up coming back to Canada to study. But I was in London for a year. I'm British, so it was a feeling of coming home. But I did indeed live in London.
So are you? Because I mean, you've spent most of you spend a lot of time in Canada, and I've read that your family moved around a lot. But mm-hmm. So your family's from British background.
Yeah, my dad was in the RAF, and we were stationed. I was born in Greece, in Cyprus, and then moved back to England, Lincolnshire and the Lake District, and then we ended up moving to Canada.
Lake District's lovely. I used to live
there.
It
is. It's beautiful there.
Do you remember what your first paying professional job was?
I'm pretty sure it was one of those really, really, really stupid parts where I had to point somewhere and say, he went that way. I mean, it was literally that cliche.
We interviewed one of the ladies that was in the episode of Nemesis from season 2, Kimberly Warnett. And I think her first job was selling a squeezing dog, wasn't it, James?
It was, wasn't it? I can't remember the name of it, though. It was really weird.
It was what? A squeezing dog?
Yeah, you squeezed the dog and it like made a sound or something like that. Like the first job. I'm always curious what people's first professional jobs are.
So it's about, I also read, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you launched your own theatre company after you graduated.
I did, yeah. You know, you're kind of sitting around, you've done all your studies, and then you're thinking, okay, what now? How do I get a job? The people that I graduated from theater school with, they were sitting around as well. And I thought, well, let's do something. And, you know, it's one of those things where you think, had I known how much hard work it was, I don't know if I would have done it. But, yeah, we all got together and we, you know, the first couple of shows were horrendous and, you know, really, really, really bad. But they got better and better, and ended up doing theater for a couple of years. Some really great shows. And then you just, you know, then you get to a place where, okay, doing it for nothing is okay. And then you start making money and it all changes things. But I loved the theater. I really, really loved doing live theater, and I haven't done much since.
Is that going to be something that you intend to change at all? Or?
Yeah, there's a project coming up that I'm in talks with about doing something in Vancouver. Vancouver's tricky. It's really, the theater here can be hit and miss, but there's a lot of really, really great talent. And so we're trying to put something together. There's a wonderful play called Danny and the Deep Blue Sea mm-hmm. that we're looking at.
I guess your first job with the Chris Carter universe was with X-Files. How did that come about?
Oh, that was kind of a really, really wonderful launch of my career. And I owe so much to Chris for being such an instrumental part of my career. I had auditioned for David Nutter for a day player on Millennium. It was a really nice role, but it was one of those days where just everything kind of lined up. I went into the room and David Nutter was there, and Chris Carter was sitting in the corner, and a couple of other producers were there, and everything just lined up. I mean, auditioning can be, you know, you just never know sometimes how it's going to go.
Right.
And it was one of those days where it just, everything felt right, and it was a great audition. And so I got home, and the next day I had Corinne Mayers ended up calling me at home, which was in Vancouver. She's one of the biggest casting directors, and it was kind of like very, very odd that she was calling me at home.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Well, I'm calling you to let you know that you know, two things. One, you didn't get the part. They ended up writing the part out. But two, Chris has a character that he'd like to write for you. It's
wow.
a recurring role, and they'd like to know if you'd like to take the role." And I mean, I remember it was one of those moments where I couldn't help but scream on the phone, and I was jumping down on the bed, and she was saying, "Well, I guess that would be, I'll let them know that would be a yes."
Well, did Chris ever give you any background to what he saw in Lucy? Was there anything larger than what we saw on screen to the character?
I think that's one of the really magical things that Chris has about him, is that he doesn't give a lot away, and I think he writes for the people that play the roles. He just leaves a lot up to the performer to create in their own imagination. And I think I might have commented this on a written interview that I gave not too long ago, in that, you know, when things are spelled out too clearly, it doesn't leave a lot to the imagination of the viewer.
Right.
And so when you're given, you know, sort of not free rein, but your own imagination can kick in and create the background and not spell too much out. And you'll notice in his writing, he leaves a lot to the imagination. So to answer your question, there were things, you know, there were things that you just kind of go by instinct that you're not going to give away. As a performer, you don't give away in interviews or, you know, but it's sort of, a lot of it's left unsaid, unspoken, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of trust that he gives the performers.
Was your Lucy Butler character based on anyone, you know what I mean? Sometimes some people base their character on, like, people they know or someone they've seen on the screen before.
Well, there was a little man with red horns that... at the time. There were things that I pulled, but mainly it was from the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly it was from what Chris alluded to, and what he, you know, there's always various aspects of human nature that I think everybody has inside of them,
right,
that you can pull from within, and this just seemed to be one of those characters that things could come from within, as opposed to, you know, looking outside for inspiration. And a lot of times it's really great to look outside, you know. I think Johnny Depp's a really great example of that in The Pirates,
oh, yeah.
You know, in what he does. But sometimes you can really just go inside. And that was a really scary thing and liberating about the character. Was, you know, I remember the first time we worked with the special effects, and they were incredible, the stuff that they did. But it was over the Christmas holidays that they put the, you know, that they started working on the special effects for the whole, you know, the mask and the hands and the chest plate. And when I had it all on the very first time, I had quite a few hours to go back into the trailer and sort of explore it. And it was very, very, very interesting and, you know, a kind of an experience like no other, that, you know, when do you get a chance to do that? But with that kind of talent, in terms of the special effects,
right,
it was, you can really lose yourself in it, in a good way.
In the season one, when you played Lucy, there was the character wasn't horrendously sexual, was she? She was more of a sort of cunning manipulator, and that seemed to change quite dramatically when you came back to play her in the following seasons. Was that sort of change an aspect of her you're interested in, or was that an area? Was that an area that you wanted to? Did you want to explore with Lucy something that was less? I don't know. I don't want to downplay the sexuality of Lucy, but it was obviously something which connected with the audience. You know, sexuality on TV connects with the audience, and I wondered if that was something that you actually embraced, or was something you'd have rather kept away from.
Well, I think that it was again, there was you know, aspects of that in the writing, and it just sort of naturally came out. I mean, there was never really any big discussions about, I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for if you're doing something wrong, they'll let you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came out of in the writing, and what, you know, what where the writing was taking it. So I just ended up following that, and it was also really fun to play with Lance in that realm too. I remember the scene where you guys will have to help me out in terms of what season it was, but when we're in the interview room, I'm sitting on the edge of the desk, and he's got me in the police station. Do you remember that scene?
That was season one, was it?
Season one, yeah.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, that was when it just first started coming out, and it might have inspired the writers to go in that direction, but I just remember really, really sort of toying with Frank Black in that scene, and it was kind of the spark of that. And you know, Lance is so much fun to play with because, well, he's quite intimidating, and and so to be able to play on that level with him was really, really exciting.
When we interviewed Lance a couple weeks ago, we asked him, you know, about the Lucy Butler character, and I have a quote from him. He said, "Sarah was something else. She's some actress. She really is. If the devil were to appear, it would be as seductive and devilish as her. Many actresses have tried to play that type of role and have failed. Sarah was terrific as Lucy Butler."
That's great. I can't say enough about Lance. I mean, I remember it was one of the first roles that I really got to sink my teeth into. And up until then, I you know, studying and doing theater and coming fresh out of, you know, wanting to get into the industry, you have all sorts of excitement about it, and not to downplay the work before, but you just kind of wonder, wow, is this it? Like, maybe that excitement isn't there in television. Maybe you can only get it in live theater. And I remember the first day going to set, I had an out of body experience. I was so scared. I mean, it was a scene with Lance and Terry. And it was at Lucy's house.
Right.
And I basically had to walk circles around them. I thought, oh my God, here's these two powerful, powerful actors. And you know, what have I done, really? And I've got to play cat and mouse with them. And it just, you know, it was something with the character. It was something with the, you know, how Chris wrote it. And I also think there's a real trap in, you know, when you're playing a character like that, if you play the character, you know, if you play the intensity of it, or if you play the where the character is coming from, if you're trying to play that, it just doesn't work. You know, you have to find a real place to come from.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember working with Lance, and I couldn't sleep for days. It was so exciting. He was so playful, and I mean, he's like a big kid. You know, he's a kid in a grown-up's body, and he makes it so fun, and he's a very exciting actor.
It was about having your alter ego for the character as well. I mean, I recalled when Bill Bixby used to do the Incredible Hulk TV show. He used to avoid seeing his alter ego, the Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, wasn't it? So he could keep his portrayal separate to the silly green man with the wig. What's about you? Because I mean, you worked with Scott Heindel, wasn't it? Who did?
Yes.
Who played the? I'm going to be. You might sound a bit rude here. The creepy long-haired man. Did you have any approach to working together, or how did that come up? We didn't.
We actually kept ourselves very, very separate.
Right.
And I think that was kind of an unconscious decision. And we just were both on the same page, and we pretty much avoided each other, which was really neat. Which was, I think, you know, the danger is when you want to talk too much. And you know, you want to get the story down, and again, it comes back to giving the viewer the respect and the responsibility to play with their own imagination.
That was so brilliant about Lucy's, is that she wasn't just, men would watch the show and were naturally attracted to the character, and at the same time, she was effectively the devil, which sort of made them a little more scared. But worse than that, she was also a man. So, you know, this real combination of these three horrible, this dichotomy, how do I deal with this? I'm allured, but yet, oh no, she's a man and she's a devil. I think I was so cool about the character. I think she's lasted.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the fan favorites that you were involved in was A Room with No View from season 2.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you prepare for that episode?
Well, tell me some of the favorite scenes that you had in there.
I wish I'd actually written his name down. What was the name of the your fellow actor who was in Malcolm in the Middle?
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Christopher Masterson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that I thought that those were the... Because it was quite a strange episode because there was absolutely no contact with Lance in that episode. It was just mm-hmm. you were utterly separate and you're waiting throughout the whole episode for this this meeting of minds again, the duality between the two of you, and it never comes. And that, mm-hmm. that is very weird. But I have to say that is probably one of the freakiest episodes for me out of the whole show. The whole idea of being so trapped and so... And there's a real feeling that you could never escape.
And someone just breaking you down.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Because it's like a prison of war thing, isn't it? There's a reality thing that connects to you as well, adding this mystical horror thing too. It's a good episode.
Well, that was a really neat thing about the two lines that episode had was there is an element of the, you know, of the brainwashing and trying to take what is, you know, unique and special about people and you know, take it out of them. And I think that's what the episode was, you know, very interesting. There's a lot of reality to that.
And all along the Love is Blue music playing in the background.
Yeah.
Did that ever affect you? Because I know Lance Zoe said that he very much took home a lot of the internal struggle that his character and the stories took him through. Did you find that at all? Because, I mean, that's a horrendously quite depressing story. And at the end of it, as I recall, you're never entirely sure whether the kid actually gets over it or not.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you always want to have hope. But what the show really did and pushed the limits to is did take a look at all of the, you know, the underbelly of what goes on and the darkness in the world and what goes on. And I think that's where the show triumphed and also struggled in a sense. And so, you know, you try your best to let it go. And I have to admit though, most of the time, you know, what I took home was, well, did I do it justice? Did I bring as much as I could have? Was I creative enough? Was, you know, what was the work there? That's what I have a tendency to bring home more of. And, you know, you always have a sense of watching it and thinking, wow, this, you know, there was so many more layers that I could have gone to. But I think that's just human nature.
I think my favorite episode that you were involved in was Antipas, where you played the nanny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was, yeah.
That was a great episode. I think the scene that stands out to me in that episode was at the very end when Frank comes in and you're in the hospital bed and you tell him that you lost the child. Oh. And that look on your face was just...
It's ugly. It's awful. I was like, oh. I remember. I think it was, I don't know, probably 5:30 in the morning at a coffee shop. I was rehearsing. I really wanted to get really into that scene and really get to the down and dirty of that scene. And so I rehearsed with a coach of mine and. Literally, the only place we could meet was in a coffee shop at about 5:30 in the morning, and it was quite a funny scenario. I think that was a really telling scene of the ugliness of that character.
I think the little girl in that Rachel Victoria who played Davina, she was really great in that too.
She was. She had that eerie kind of look, didn't she?
Yeah,
on screen she did. Yeah.
I mean, that virtually out-omened The Omen, didn't it, that homage? It was equally as unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
Is it nice to be known as an evil character? Are you superstitious at all? Do you ever, playing something which is obviously so associated with Satan does that ever bother you at all?
You know, that doesn't bother me because it's a character. And it's fun. It's a character. It's playing something that you're not, but that you're giving life to. I think the characters that I don't like playing are the characters that are real characters, you know, a mom or a wife or that don't have any respect or dignity, that are victims, and I think those are the characters that I find, you know, I really don't want to give a voice to.
I was recently talking to my roommate, and I was telling him about, you know, this interview and this Lucy Butler character, because he hears me talk about it all the time. And he's like, well, why don't you show me a couple episodes? So I put in, it's Lamentation, right, James?
Yeah.
And the scene where Bletcher's at the bottom of the steps and you're at the top.
Yeah.
And you're walking down and it's you, then it's the guide, and it's the devil. Freaked him out.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Everyone I show that scene to, it just totally freaks him out.
Yeah, it was so, you know, it was so good. It was just one of the funnest things of being involved in the project was involved in the show was reading the scripts, you know, for the first time. I'd sit down and I just sort of look at the first page and think, wow, this is, you know, this is going to be, I take my time with it and always wonder what was going to happen. And it was never, never disappointing. It was always incredible to turn each page.
I remember when I was watching Millennium, because I didn't catch it fully on its first run, because in England they only showed it at about, you know, I don't know, 12:30 at night. As I said before, I think they thought they were getting the X-Files ITV, and then they find that they're getting this far darker and sinister show, and they shoved it as late as they could. But I remember after a couple of episodes, I remember Lamentation was the first one, was one of the first few I saw, and quite how shocking that episode is, because it's very rare, I think, in TV, or it was rare for me, if I may blow my own trumpet, to actually be fooled about who the culprit is. And I never, your portrayal of Lucy through that, until you're actually meant to know that it is Lucy who is really behind all this, I never got it at all. It just totally flew past me. And then, of course, to have near the end where she suddenly starts turning into creepy long-haired guy as well. You know, that seriously is television. I'd have loved to have seen... Actually, I'd love to have seen your face when you read that script, because that must have been...
Oh, so fun. So fun. You know, it's, I mean, how does it get any better? It's just, it's so exciting to think that, wow, this is, you know, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing about the industry, the business, and about Chris Carter's writing is, It's to bite into that and to play is really, really exciting.
Another person who had great comments about your work, and especially Antipas, since he co-wrote it, was Frank Spotnitz.
Oh, yeah.
When we interviewed him, he thought you were brilliant in Antipas.
The two of them worked very closely together on the show. So when did you interview him?
About a couple months ago, James.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, about a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm. Very nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was charming, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
A true gent. What was it? I mean, you obviously did a very brief cameo on the X-Files 2 film. Mm-hmm. What was that like going back to the 10-13 fold?
You know, it was really, when I first went in, there was a wonderful part in the film that ended up going to another actress, and then they offered me that role, the one that I played. And again, you know, just being involved in it and getting a chance to work with Chris again is like family. So and seeing David and Jillie again was really, really fun.
They seem like very nice people to work with.
They are. Yeah. David's a funny guy.
I have to ask you, because I'm a big fan of horror movies. And there's a particular movie you were involved with Dean Winters. Hellraiser?
Oh, yeah.
Hellseeker?
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. I'm just a big fan of the Hellraiser franchise. And uh-huh. I remember, I know she was involved in the Hellraiser. And I was like, that's right, with Dean Winters. Because Dean Winters is another favorite actor of mine.
He's such a nice guy.
How was it working on that film?
Oh, it was, you know, it's fun. It's always fun to be involved in something that's like a franchise like that,
uh-huh.
You know, because, the fan base is pretty big and it's just cool. I mean, I remember I worked on a Walt Disney picture, and that was, you know, kind of a childhood dream. It's fun to be involved in something that has that kind of following. But, It was interesting, you know. It was interesting, all, you know, getting down in, into the, taking layers off of clothing is, you know, I was lucky to keep some on. So, yeah, no, Dean was super, super nice. He's such a great guy.
Going back to Lucy briefly, I put this to you. If Lucy is perhaps almost the Antichrist, and I suggest to you that you are the anti-James, because I was looking at your hobbies and running, boxing, skydiving, martial arts, all things which would terrify me and would hurt me and would make me cry.
Probably justifiably so, yeah.
So given, I mean, I think I read somewhere that you sort of, you like the rush of the theatre as well. Is Sarah Jane Redmond an adrenaline junkie? Are you hooked to a high?
Yeah. I think, you know, I used to be. I haven't done much of it lately since the birth of my son, but I definitely used to be. I think, yeah, things change once you have kids. You can't be as reckless as I used to be. I can't be as reckless. But I think living on the edge definitely appealed to me. And I don't know if I'd ever jump out of a plane again. With a chute not opening, so.
Were there any nasty injuries from those?
No, too many close calls. So I think I counted my numbers.
There was another show you were involved with. You played Sergeant Sheila Kurtz in Da Vinci's Inquest.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great show.
It's a really great show. I hear it's running over in Britain now.
Oh, is it?
I think so. Yeah, it was really based on I think it was Blue Murder. Was it
mm-hmm.
Blue Murder? Yeah, Helen Mirren.
Right.
Yeah, the character was based on that. Oh, it was such a, you know, it was such a great family show in terms of all we worked together for 8 years and, you know, we knew each other like family and the character was a lot of fun to play. Very, I wouldn't say me at all, which is, you know, was a real sort of mind game for me when they ended up offering the part to me. I thought, oh God, these are some pretty tall orders to fill.
Right.
And, but again, sometimes people see things in you that not necessarily you may see in yourself.
I thought you were fantastic and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I keep going back to Lucy. I'm terribly sorry. It makes you sound like a one-hit wonder.
I'm sure she'd be okay with that.
I don't even want to think what she'd be okay with. Yes, go back to Lucy. If there was a revival, if Chris's head was turned towards Millennium again, what would be the direction you would like to see the character going into? Is there anything that have you ever thought about that at all? How would you like to see Lucy come back?
I think I would be a fool to ever contemplate where Chris would or should.
Oh. Yeah, you're dancing around the questions. You're dancing around the landmine.
Well, I know this for certain. Playing with Lance would definitely be something that I think Lucy would enjoy and thrive on. And getting back into the box with Frank Black, I know she'd jump at the chance.
Are there any current projects you're working on right now you'd like to promote?
You know, I'm on hold for something shooting over on Vancouver Island, so I can't really say if I'm going to be working on that
okay.
right now. Yeah, it was a really fun little project called Sorority Roars with Faith Ford and Courtney Thorne Smith. I think that's coming out soon. And other than that, I'm just really busy with my little guy, raising my son, and looking to see what's around the corner.
We have there's another podcast that we're friends with. It's called Spook Talker. They do stuff about paranormal TV shows, but one show that they were actually incredibly hooked on was Harper's Island.
Yeah.
Where you played Sarah Mills.
Mm-hmm.
How was it playing working on that show? Because that's kind of a campy, cheesy series, wasn't it?
You know, I have to tell you, I didn't watch it.
Really?
I haven't watched it. I got out of watching a lot of just the habit of watching out, you know, unless it's kind of a recurring role and you want to see where you're taking something.
Okay.
It was kind of neat because it was shot over on Bowen Island where my family live. And So I was able to hang out over here. Well, hang out, no pun intended. I ended up getting hung on the show, so.
Well, I hadn't actually seen it yet. It's coming on over here very
Oops.
Soon. So. Great. No, I look forward to seeing you being hanged.
Yeah.
In the nicest possible way.
And how is Mr. Henriksen doing? Is he working on things, or what's he up to?
Lance is always working.
Yeah.
He's in Texas at the moment, and I think he's going. I think he's got another job straight after.
You know what? Whatever you guys need, I'd love to be a part of this. And I mean, it would just be what a great thing it would be to have it on the screen again. Yeah, big smile on my face.
What was it like working with Claire Scott? She's one of my favorite actresses too.
She's such a sweet woman. Such a sweet woman. Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything bad about it. She was wonderful. She was a really, really, really sweet, open, generous, and very thoughtful. Very, very. You could always see her thinking and about what the scene was about and what she was going to bring. And she takes her work very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's hope that let's hope that we all get a chance to work together again. What a party that would be.
I think so. I think perhaps we should use your persona as Lucy Butler and perhaps break into Chris Carter's house and arrange for you to, I don't know, just appear in the window occasionally and freak him into thinking that this is an omen, quite literally.
This is all coming from you, remember that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm acting as an agent. I might as well now start acting as a criminal mastermind as well.
And there you go.
Well, Sarah, we definitely want to thank you for taking the time out to talk with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Sorry to keep you guys waiting so long.
No.
I'll be much more available now. Good luck with everything, and just stay in touch, and whatever you need, I'm available.
Thank you very much. And we'll be in touch.
Okay, take care. Thanks for introducing me to Skype.
Skype is very cool. You will be addicted to it.
Oh, right on.
Oh, what an interview. I have to say that I find Lucy Butler a very disturbing character, and I suppose in a way that it leaks a little onto poor old Sarah Jane, that you feel slightly dirty for being attracted to something which is meant to be so evil. Did you ever get that? Do you feel that there's a sort of slight guilt of there's a innate that innate religious element that's probably thrust upon you at Sunday school, sort of welling to the surface, sort of going, she's meant to be the devil, how can you be attracted to her? And you feel, oh god, that's awful. Do you get that?
Here's where I'm going with this, bro.
Yeah.
We know exactly what Lucy Butler is, but right. If she would appear in front of me, and me knowing what I know about Lucy Butler, I would still go with her.
That's what's scary, isn't it? That's,
yeah. Even though I know she's a man and she's the devil, I'd still go with her.
I know, absolutely. Well, you just got to pray, haven't you? That, and my apologies to Sarah Jane if you're listening to this, but if you were with her and suddenly she turned into creepy long-haired guy halfway through, you sure that would have been a night worth remembering? I mean, you've got to consider these things, but that is the point, isn't it, with Lucy Butler, is that, and with the whole femme fatale thing, is that it's based on that notion that our natural urges are so powerful, so strong, that they just negate rationale and logic. And that's what I think is what's so scary about Lucy Butler, more than the standard demon, is that there's that bit of reality in there that we're aware. And man has been aware for many years, come millennia.
The thing about Sarah Jane Redmond is that not only is she an absolutely beautiful woman and played that role tremendously, but not to take away, she's a great actress.
Yes.
And she just made that role hers, and she was just amazing.
Well, if you consider, I mean, as I was saying in the interview with Lamentation, the way she is through in the first couple of acts that she's in, is if you watch that, it's so very different to obviously how she portrays her later on. And it totally threw me.
Especially in Antipas.
Yes.
She was just absolutely, and I'm going to act like a 15-year-old kid, hot in that episode. She was, dude.
And you are a 15-year-old kid.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. All the girls in Millennium are hot to you. I must admit, she is very attractive in Millennium. I cannot deny that. I try not to say it because I fear with my British accent that it will sound creepy.
And that's actually true.
Yes, exactly. Oh, a beautiful lady. You know, it's like, no, people don't want to hear me saying that.
But we hope you guys enjoyed that interesting interview with Sarah Jane. And she's obviously a big supporter of our campaign. So that's another great plus for us.
Yes. Yeah, so don't forget, write comments on the blog. Let her know. Let her see your love. Let her see that your love is as blue as the images that are probably as blue in your head after you've watched Antipass.
Exactly. Because as always, they check the blog.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Check the blog.
As I've said before, selfishly, if you want to put your hand up so that they can see you and see you exist and see what you feel and what you believe, write on the blog because they will read it. And that's not only helps the campaign because it shows and it helps us because we see what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. But it tells our guests that you've appreciated it and it's been worth their while. And I think that is quite seriously a really important thing.
And this will bring to an end what I think was a fantastic Lucy Butler week, don't you think?
Yes, and I've been absent for 90% of it, but yeah. Just looking through my emails today when I've come back online and seeing those and actually going to the blog and seeing those fantastic postcards that Mark has done and those great t-shirts.
Yeah, fantastic postcards from Mark. Baz, again, created two outstanding t-shirts, which I'm going to order. And the new guy that just posted something for us, I think it's Dirt. He posted a video. He did a review of Room With No View.
Yeah.
That's up on the blog now. That was fantastic. Yosef did another brilliant, brilliant video with the Lucy Butler video.
So I've yet to see that. I've not had time, but I will.
You have to see it. He outdid himself on this one.
Oh, that's good. Yes, it's been a great week. And if you have time, then please do download those postcards and perhaps send them off to Fox, to Mr. Broidy.
And as we said before, we do know Sarah has been looking at the blog. So
she
is aware of all that's going on.
She is, just like a character. She's there. She's there. She sees you. She's right behind you. You know, that sort of thing, isn't it?
But on some other news, we had the XFN crossover podcast we did a couple weeks ago, and we are still accepting entries for the contest. Right, James?
Yes. Well, we've had a lot of entries for the contest, so we felt that we might as well extend it a little longer and let those flood in.
So if you know the answer to the question, which was, what character both appears in Millennium, an episode of Millennium, and an episode of X-Files? If you know the answer to that question, send us an email at info@backtofrankblack.com with your address and the answer, and put XFN contest in the headline.
Yeah. I'll give us some credit. We'll work it out.
Yeah.
There's something along those lines would be great.
And just get that to us before the 13th. So we'll do it to the 13th of September.
We've got things to watch out for. I mean, obviously, again, there's the Chicago Horror Convention next month.
October 22nd to the 25th. And I've already got my tickets and room.
Looking at mine this weekend. Now I've got my move sorted out and I've got my internet back. There's also we've got a charity event that we're organizing, so keep your eyes and ears and nose and mouth peeled for that.
Let me just say, as far as the charity event goes, that we've have some very very cool stuff being donated to us by former cast and crew of Millennium for the charity. So there's gonna be a lot of stuff you guys are going to be bidding on, stuff I don't want to give away, but it's for charity, so some really good stuff is coming in for our charity.
Yeah, so please, you know, please bid on when the charity auction comes up.
We will keep you posted when it's going to be up. We're partnering with someone, and once we get it all finalized, we'll send out some information to you guys. But it's for a worthy cause. If you want to know, it's Children of the Night. You can go to their website, and it's definitely for a worthy cause.
Yes, please do have a look at that when it comes out, and
and the usual stuff. You know, go to the blog, leave comments. Let us know what you think about this podcast and all the other podcasts we've done, any other posts, especially the Lucy Butler Week stuff we just recently did. Buy the DVDs, as always.
Yeah, buy the DVDs. Please buy the DVDs. And, I mean, you can do something that Avi and Tiffany said in our last podcast about the X-Files. If you've already bought the DVDs, if you see them at a price you can afford, why not buy them as a gift to a friend?
Yeah.
You know? You're buying the DVD again. You're doing the show service, and it'll be for a good cause. Because I wouldn't want to ask you to go and buy a double dip on a DVD just for the sake of it, unless you've got barrel loads of money or you're insanely fanatical like El Troyo here.
Thank you.
But you know, that's a great idea for a friend. Christmas is coming up. Why not?
Exactly. And you know, if you can't afford the entire box set, why not just buy them the first season and let them get hooked on it, then they can buy the rest themselves, or however you want to do it. But that'd be a great idea as a gift for someone that's coming up Christmas.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea of mine. Stroke Abby, stroke Tiffany. But I'll claim it as mine because they're not here to refute it. And if they do refute it, we'll know they've listened to our podcast and I'll be very happy.
Which they will. We know they
will. Of course
they
will. They better.
So as always, we want to thank you for taking the time to listen to our podcast, because without you guys, we would not be here. Well, I would be here. I wouldn't have James here, but I have to tag him along. So whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was looking tough because I didn't have internet this week. So it might have been just you by yourself.
Yeah. But James luckily got everything worked out and our friend is back with us. So I welcome you back, James.
And I will welcome myself back the usual British way.
You know what that sounds like, don't you?
Does it sound like something that you might be editing out of this podcast if I name it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just say, you know what that sounds like, and we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
But anyway, as always, on behalf of my good friend James, we want to thank you guys for listening to the show and stay tuned for our next episode.
Toodle pip.
Toodle pip. I thought you'd have a new one by now.
It's become so popular. I thought I would just ride the wave of its popularity for a bit before I come up with a new one.
Well, let's take it hood then. It's, you know how you would say toodle pip to say goodbye? Let's take it hood. We're going to say holla.
Holla.
No, not holla. Holla.
Holla.
No, not holler. Holla.
Holla.
There you go. That was it. Holla.
Holla.
No, you're doing too much. It's like Family Guy. Cool whip. No, it's not whip, it's whip. Holla.
Holla.
Much better.
Good.
That's what we say when we're leaving our boys, when we're rolling out. We say holla.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah, now you know. That's our way of saying goodbye.
I'd have thought toodle pip would have sufficed. I mean, it's just so easy to say.
So holla's easier. Toodle pip is three syllables. Holla.
It's not about the syllables.
It is about the syllables.
It's about the phonetics, and there's no phonetics to holla.
Who needs phonetics? It's simple. It's to the point. Holla.
I mean, you listen to music. I mean, if you listen to your rap music or whatever you listen to in America, you know, I'm sure you're listening to the phonetics. You're listening to the sound, the textures in the words, in the beats and in the rhythm. Phonetics is vital. Oh, and there's toodle pip.
You want me to break it down for you? Toodle pip sounds feminine.
I like women. Obviously, you don't then.
Oh!
I embrace the feminine side. Obviously, you don't. Obviously, yours is just a bit of bluster.
Ooh,
a bit of hot air.
That was harsh.
That was a slap across your face, wasn't it?
Just a little bit. Holla. That's how you got to do it, dog. One more time, James.
Holla.
If you would like to join the Back to Frank Black campaign, or have any questions or comments, go to backtofrankblack.com or contact us at info@backtofrankblack.com. Remember, we are all shepherds.